here if there's something comes up. Great. But normally then they would.
Good morning. I'm convening this meeting of Subcommittee on Human Services, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. It is June 17th. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 5526, Oregon Health Authority. Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, members of the Subcommittee, before we start into the work session, I want to warn you, tomorrow morning, we're meeting in Hearing Room E. So, a big group needed the big room, so we got kicked out.
It's, we're a pretty big group.
It's also posted on the system, but I thought you don't want to be running all over looking for your committee in the morning.
Linda, what's a big group that needs our room? Marijuana group?
It's some sort of workforce, but it's both House and Senate. So, like we did last week, we're going to go through three more sections of the OHA budget, and then we'll adopt the final amendment at the end of that. So we'll start with addictions and mental health, AMH. And they're in separate packets on the system for you. So again, there's a memo that gives you the summary budget and then some highlights. And then after that, I'll go through the more detailed spreadsheet.
So I open a work session.
She did. The budget for AMH is 13.5% higher than the 13-15 budget in terms of total funds. That's primarily because of the roll-up costs of the past investments in this program, as well as the new investments that are in this recommendation for community mental health and addiction services. Some highlights: there's an increase of about $44 million in state resources to fund the roll-up of all the ongoing program investments made in the past in the mental health programs, as well as caseload increases and inflation in the current service level. The budget adds an additional $8.7 million for caseload growth. That's associated with the most recent, the spring caseload forecast. There are new investments in this budget of $22 million in community mental health treatment services. This includes approximately $7 million for crisis services, including mobile crisis, $6.5 million for jail diversion programs, $7 million for supported housing, i.e. rental assistance, and peer-delivered services, and $1.5 million to expand access to the Oregon Psychiatric Access Line for kids that we commonly call OPAL-K. The budget also includes $6 million of investment in addictions treatment and recovery support, including increased capacity for detoxification, withdrawal management, sobering centers, and peer-delivered services. The budget includes $4.1 million to fund aid and assist restoration services in the community. The hope is to reduce the number of patients being sent to the state hospital for that purpose and to treat them in the community at a significantly lower cost. And finally, at the state hospital, it opens four of the six wards in Junction City. It will increase the total system capacity by 38 beds compared to where we've been at over the last year or so after Blue Mountain closed. This is expected to help be able to serve more of the civilly committed who right now are often on a wait list. Okay, and then if we go over to the detailed spreadsheet and start down again, the top part is existing packages that were in the governor's budget, and in some cases I'll note we've modified them a bit. The first one, package 81, is the 15-17 costs related to September 2014 emergency board actions. This one, we approved funding for regional mental health specialist coordinators that would coordinate services between the mental health system and the senior system. Package 82 are actions that were taken at the December emergency board that rolled up. There was a big chunk of general fund that went to fill a budget hole at the state hospital, and a significant amount of federal funding related to the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Grant. Okay, then Package 90. The state hospital, we will in the Salem State Hospital, will continue to keep the Jarrow Ward closed. And I guess, first of all, I want to describe to you how current service level was built for the state hospital. We built that assuming all of Junction City and Salem would open and be fully funded. And so now what you're seeing are reductions in general fund as we have made final decisions about how many of those wards would actually open. The Jarrow Ward's been closed for a while, partly because the agencies, DHS and OHA, have worked together to place a number of those people in the community. On line 7 in Junction City, we'll open 4 wards but keep the cottages and 2 wards closed. That will give us a total bed capacity in the system of 696 beds, or the increase of 38 beds over where we are currently. I also wanted to note, as a part of reshoot, the state hospital submitted a plan to realign some of its positions for Junction City. The staffing plan for this facility was originally developed over 2 years ago. Since then, they've closed Blue Mountain, they've closed Portland, they've moved staff to Salem, they've moved Salem staff to Junction City, and in addition, they've learned a lot about staffing requirements by operating Salem for a couple of years, and so they're realigning some of their positions at Junction City to reflect that increased knowledge. The alignment is budget neutral. Line 8, the state hospital increased Medicare revenues. We heard during the public testimony, the state hospital is doing a lot of work to increase their federal money, and in particular Medicare. They've increased some staffing that will allow for better processes in terms of making sure doctors document what's necessary, make sure billings happen. They're going through the process of getting more of their wards certified for Medicare reimbursement. I think this is a modest expectation. I'm very hopeful that as we get into the second rebalance later in the biennium, we're going to see more than this. But I it was too early to know, because the processes that have to happen can take quite a bit of time. Number 9, there were a couple of adjustments to the fall caseload pricing. Number 10, in the governor's budget, there was some increased tobacco tax revenue, but that was not invested in brand new programs. Rather, it was used to fund the roll-up cost of the investments that had already happened. And because, as I mentioned, there were significant roll-up costs. A lot of those investments during the current biennium were not for the full 24 months. They were only for 12 or 18. So just making them the full 24 months was fairly expensive. So we have, on that line 10, we have gone ahead and accepted that package as the governor built it. But you'll see down below there is now some additional tobacco tax that will go into new investments. Number 11 is the update to the lottery forecast. That program, all the lottery dollars in this budget are related to gambling addiction prevention and treatment. So you see they're up. They're over 11. As the lottery forecast went down, that program's funding went down over the last couple of years, so it's nice to see it coming back up. Number 12, some agency realignment transfers in between divisions. Then on Package 13, the aid and assist evaluations in the community that we talked about earlier, more restoration services, the hope of having fewer people going to the state hospital. This is really a companion piece to the House Bill 2420 that has passed, which was the agency's bill, which will require courts to at least look at community resources before they send someone to the state hospital for those restoration services. The agency expects to target the 4 counties that have the highest number of aid and assist. Multnomah, Marion Lane in Washington, although they expect to set aside a small portion of the funding to deal with specific issues in some of the other counties.
And just a quick question. The state hospital, number of people that are aid and assist is shot off the map. It's an uncontrolled number, very expensive. When will we get a report back on whether this money has been effective in slowing that process? Or is there reporting back on this at all?
We'll see when we get to the budget notes for AMH, which we'll do as in part of the final wrap-up. There will be some reporting back on the new investments, and that will be an opportunity to really look at that data in more detail.
Okay, thank you.
Line 14, the mental health certification investment. This would allow AMH to centralize the regulatory responsibilities for the oversight of the community-based mental health programs. It includes four positions to do that work. And line 15, Measure 91 implementation. It 25% of the revenues from the new recreational marijuana is dedicated to mental health and treatment, addictions, and mental health, probably addictions, more specifically. So this limitation was added in case they get that revenue, but we did not back out general fund, which we do have that tendency to do sometimes, because this revenue is very uncertain at this stage, it would come in late in the biennium. And then Package 801, the specific legislative adjustments to this budget, it does include the spring forecast, the $8.7 million. It includes the Oregon State Hospital cost allocation cost of about $10 million. So I wanted to describe this one a little better because it will be an ongoing issue that we'll see come back and rebalance, I'm sure. In a recent audit of another program, the agency became aware that the state hospital was not participating in cost allocation. That's the process where each program pays for their share of the admin and overhead of the agency. The feds are very particular about this because they want to make sure their money isn't being spent disproportionately on some of those costs. There may be some agency overhead that the state hospital legitimately doesn't need to pay since they are somewhat more of a standalone operation than many other parts of the agency. But the agency is sorting through those issues over the next few months. They will also need to get a new cost allocation plan approved by the feds once the issues are all resolved. I would expect that the agency will report back on this issue at their rebalance and later in probably in November.
Madam Chair?
Oh, yes.
I want to make sure everybody understands what's going on here. The feds do not like large mental health institutions, and they won't fund them or pay for them. And they don't want to be funding and pay for them in a sort of a back office way of not having the overhead covered by their money. So they are watching these programs very carefully. They don't like our big state hospitals. They don't like Junction City. They think we're going in the wrong direction. I think we're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I'll have more comments later. But I want people to understand the feds are watching these programs, mm-hmm. and they aren't happy about it. They think we're moving in the wrong direction in the state as far as big institutions are concerned. And they probably have a point. But we're also trying to move the other direction at the same time. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Line 21, the change in the federal match rate, or line 21, results in a small general fund savings. Line 22, the tobacco master settlement agreement. Remember, we moved some of that out of medical assistance programs and into AMH, into the community mental health program. So we backed out the general fund and replaced it with that TMSA funding. Then line 3, you see the additional community mental health investment, $17.6 million general fund and $4.6 million in other funds. That's the additional, the other funds are the additional tobacco tax revenues that are now available as of the May revenue forecast. Line 24 is the additional A&D treatment services that we talked about earlier, the $6 million.
Linda? on these two line items, is there some reason there's no federal match to them, as a lot of the people being treated are going to be Medicaid patients? Is that figured in the budget, or some reason that's not in there?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, in general, the treatment services that remain in AMH's budget are not matched. They are to serve either people that are not eligible for the health plan or services like wraparound kind of services that are not eligible for match. In general, all of this budget that is matchable has been moved to the medical assistance programs and to CCOs. So what we generally see left here is the non-matchable.
Thank you.
And that doesn't mean this is exactly how some of this money may end up going to the CCOs, but that's part of what needs to all be worked out.
You knew that's my next question.
And then at that point, it'll move over to the medical assistance program.
Thank you.
Representative Stark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to see line 24 with additional monies for sober facilities and detox facilities and so forth. I am interested for those in the room at some point to sit down and have a chat about how those different facilities qualify for those monies and so forth. But that's a future conversation. Just would love to have with you guys.
And I can add that the agency intends to go through a process of an application type process to try and understand who's ready, who's got their community partners, and how much do they need? Is it one time or ongoing? That those sorts of things.
Thank you.
So it's not going to be a formula driven. Just put it out to all the counties. Line 25, technical adjustments. This was actually some program that recently has moved over to medical assistance programs. We've done these adjustments that direction a number of times as more stuff's been incorporated into the CCO budgets. And finally, the Attorney General rate adjustments that we've seen in all the divisions. That will be all readjusted in the end of session bill.
It's time for me to add one of my comments. When you mentioned the Attorney General rate, we have a growing problem with managing our costs related to Department of Justice bills, and it's something that we need to tackle not only in this budget but in other budgets, and I look forward to being able to work on it pretty intensively over the interim. We've got to do something to address this. We want to make sure that we have appropriate representation whenever we need it, but it also needs to be at a cost we can afford, or we won't be able to do what we do need to do. Senator Bates.
Yes, I move the LFO preliminary budget recommendation of Senate Bill 5526.
Discussion.
I'll get a few things on the record. This is the budget, over $1 billion, that I have the most difficulty with in OHA. It is a budget that is moving in the right direction with more community health, mental health, drug and alcohol, and I appreciate the efforts at the state hospital and in Junction City to keep their costs down and to keep as many wards closed as possible. I agree with the federal government that we've moved in the wrong direction for a long time, and this session, we started moving in the right direction. My issue is that we have no real plan for this. We're putting money into various programs around the state, trying to make a difference and doing the right thing, and I appreciate that. I especially appreciate the work by the new director of OHA, Mrs. Lynn Saxton, in putting together for the first time what we call a roadmap of where the money goes. Thank you very much. That's a big step forward. I find myself in the funny position that different parts of the state are leading the charge in fixing this system for us, of developing more mental health in the community area, keeping people out, trying to keep people out of prison, and trying to keep them out of the state hospital, taking care of them in their community where they should be taken care of, and getting better results, getting these people off our streets, out of our emergency rooms, into treatment centers, and properly taken care of. I believe the money is adequate for doing that now. We have to have the will to work with our partners in the local communities. I'm deeply disappointed in this session that was not done. There's been a lot of discussion about it. I'm hoping in the interim, working with the governor's office, we can get more of that done. So I appreciate the budget, but it is still problematic for me. I'm very concerned about parts of it, and whether that money really gets used in the right way this time, and we get something going in the state that really makes sense. Hodgepodge policies across the state is not the way to run a billion-dollar budget. And I'm looking directly at Mrs. Lynn Saxton here. And the plea is that we sit down in the interim and really get this thing under control. We all want to do the right thing for people who are mentally ill and drug and alcohol problems. We have not done it. But at least now we have the funding for this. I'm going to thank the President of the Senate for pushing more money into the budget. I appreciate that. It goes my job and the job of this committee to make sure that money gets spent properly. And so I'll stop there, but I want that on the record that this is not, gee, everything's fine, you've got the money, go out and do great things. We want to see some changes across the state, and I'm getting a lot of nods out there, so I hope that's what the case is. Okay? I will quit venting.
Further discussion? There is a motion on the table. Objections? Motion passes.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, then the second packet we'll go through is the health policy programs. This is actually a bit of a hodgepodge of three different programs. The biggest of it is the health policy programs. It also includes private health partnerships and the health licensing office. Because of that, and because these aren't necessarily programs that you know as much about as some of the big ones, I've put a little description into the memo. The health policy programs, partway through the current biennium, were moved out of central services and into this, their own budget unit. It includes things that we have talked about, like the Office of Health Policy and Research, Health Analytics, the Transformation Center, Office of Equity and Inclusion, and the Office of Health Information Technology. All the general fund budget that you see in this memo is related to this program. Private health partnerships are basically going away. Most of the programs that this unit administered closed during 13-15 due to the Affordable Care Act and just handling people differently. All that remains in 15-17 is the last part of the Oregon Transitional Reinsurance Pool Program that covers certain high-cost claims through December of 2016. Almost all the budget associated with this program is in other funds non-limited because it goes to pay claims. And then finally, Health Licensing Office. This was incorporated into OHA in the middle of the biennium. It's entirely other funds, fee-supported, rather small. The idea is it will be moving into some larger program, but since we moved it in the middle of the biennium, we kept it intact in its own budget unit so that as we figured out how to deal with it. The recommended total funds budget is 52% less than 13-15. This is primarily due to the closure of those programs in the private health partnership. It's also a result of the removal of the $30 million of the transformation fund that was one-time investment for CCOs during the 13-15 biennium. There's only a couple of real adjustments in this budget. There are policy packages that fund the OHA portion of the Real D project. That's the project to design and build a tool to collect and report and analyze data on race, ethnicity, language, and disability. The IT subcommittee did have a hearing on this project and then referred it back to the Human Services Subcommittee for budget action, and that recommendation is attached. The recommendation also invests $2.4 million general fund that will continue the Transformation Center and parts of the Office of Health Policy and Research and Health Analytics after the federal State Innovation Model grant ends in September of 16. You may remember that was a very large grant that we got to help move transformation forward. On the spreadsheet, we have line three, the package 82 related to the December emergency board. We added two positions for the Office of Equity and Inclusion to do civil rights investigations. Line four, that the Real D, again, this is just the Oregon Health Authority piece. It is a joint project with DHS. The agency has recently reevaluated their approach to implementing this project in order to take advantage of the capabilities of the new MAGI transfer system that they are in, are getting up and running for Medicaid enrollment and eligibility and redeterminations. They have reduced the estimated cost of the OHA piece of the Real D project from $1.8 million down to this $634,000, and have reduced the FTE expected to be needed considerably as well.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. So will the same work get done? They've just figured out a less expensive way to do it. I have heard concerns about our commitment to this, so the same work is intended to be done, but there's a different way, or there's matched funding somewhere?
Right, Madam Chair, Representative, that is the idea. Mm-hmm. But because this is a pretty recent change, mm-hmm. and LFO and DAS hasn't had a lot of time, nor has the agency had a lot of time to really lay down in detail their plan. LFO is recommending that they report back later this fall with a more fleshed out plan. And we're also recommending that all but $140,000 of the funding be unscheduled until they report back, and both LFO and DAS agree that the project is ready to move forward. The intention, though, was not to reduce the project, but rather to use capabilities that will already be in our new system, rather than starting from scratch. And I will specifically include language in the budget report about the reporting and unscheduling.
Senator, did you have a
I was just going to say, I just want to point out that I think this is a very important project. I'm glad. Thank you, Representative Dyer, for asking that question. And Ms. Ames will look forward to more updates. But I think this is a very important project. If we want to start to really identify health disparities and be able to understand them better, we can't do that without better data. So I'm very supportive of this project and look forward to updates.
Can I ask one more question also? The Office of Equity and Inclusion that you talked about, is that budget also being reduced? You had just mentioned that, and you said something about two positions, but...
Madam Chair, Representative, so we added two positions in December, mm-hmm. for some specific functions. They're still there. The Real D project had originally envisioned 9 positions, mm-hmm. and now have reduced that to 2 because they think that's all they will need. Those two positions will also be in the Office of Equity and Inclusion.
Okay.
Package 402 and dash 2 and dash 3 then is the investment in the Transformation Center and the Office of Health Policy and Research and Health Analytics in order to backfill some of that federal grant funding that ends in September of 16.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
One quick thing. I just want to thank Dr. Janine Smith and her crew at the Office of Health Policy Research. I think a lot of people don't really understand the importance of this office for the work that we do in Oregon with health transformation and with supporting how we really give all Oregonians access to high-quality, affordable care, especially primary care. And without the work that this shop does, we would not, really would not be as far ahead as we are with healthcare transformation. And I really want to thank all of you for the work you're doing and emphasize the importance of continuing to fund this office sufficiently to, because without the right data, we cannot do our work well and we cannot achieve triple aim at all. So I want to just give that a little shout out and encourage the committee to continue to support their work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then line 10, there's some transfers of health licensing office staff. This is sort of step one of incorporating the health licensing office into the bigger agency. So these are positions that will be going to central services and shared services rather than, you know, specifically being HR support and accounting support and those kind of positions like they were when they were a standalone agency. And finally, line 11 are the Attorney General rate adjustments.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move the LFO preliminary budget recommendations to Senate Bill 5526 for the health policy programs, private health partnerships, and health licensing office.
Thank you for the motion. Discussion. Representative.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate the comment that Senator Steiner Hayward made, and I do have concerns about reducing the Real D and Office of Equity and Inclusion kind of work. I think this is critical to what OHA is trying to accomplish in closing disparities. So I support the measure, but with some concern in that area.
Further discussion? Objections? Motion passes.
Of papers here.
If anything's done, you want to put it over here to get it
out of the way? I'm turning my under as we go.
Okay, the third and last piece of this budget is the central and shared and state assessments and enterprise-wide costs. There's really nothing going on in this part of the budget.
That's good news.
Good news.
So we don't have to fund them
it's
anymore?
It's basically current service level. There's a couple little things. I will note that this is the part of the budget that does include debt service, which is at $69.7 million general fund, $73.7 million total funds. That's all related to the building state hospital. There is a small realignment of some positions in the performance excellence program. These positions used to be all in DHS, and the agencies have agreed that these are really more positions that should be focused more on agency-specific issues, and so they're realigning those to get them into the right places.
Manager?
Yes.
Ms. Ames, can you help me out for a minute here? If you look at the very first part of the document for this one, the 2013-15 legislatively approved budget was $420,700,000, give or take, dollars. The current service level is down to $406,945. The funding is at $407,055, with three more zeros after that. And the FTE have gone up. So what was the project or the big project? Did debt service go down? Because I know debt service went down in a couple other agencies because of refinancing. Or how do we get more people and more FTE for less money?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, partly I forgot to go through my first part of the memo, which is that the health policy programs moved out of central services partway through the biennium. So that's the primary reason for the reduction in total funds.
But those would be people as well,
wouldn't
they?
But it would be people as well. So let me see if I can tell my pieces where we got.
I mean, maybe there was just some big project that we did a one-time fund on that was a specific investment, or maybe we refinanced because we saved a lot of money with refinancing in a couple other debt service areas.
Positions. So the positions only go up a few, but you're right, a few would have moved out. Where are the positions? So there's, you know, a couple positions. I guess all the positions are coming in from transfers from other parts of the agency. I on the positions, I'm not sure.
I get Kate or somebody up here real quick and ask the question.
Nobody's going to know that kind of detail.
And all positions aren't equal.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, it's not the end of the world. It's just, I mean, the budget's going down, the people are going up, and it's unusual. That's all.
Paying them less and having more bodies?
Yeah. Maybe.
Now, what we see in other budgets on this is that you're hiring new people at a much lower level as far as pay is concerned. It looks like your workforce. We're talking about 8 or 9 people out of 500. My guess is they've hired people recently at a lower pay level, and that's why it looks that way until they move through the system. So I don't know for sure. We can get that answer for you later.
Fine. Thank you. Just curious.
We could fire all our elderly people.
Stop it.
And then bring in kids. Okay. Probably good in a lot of ways.
As a member of the chronologically advantaged group, I don't think that's why.
Ms. Well, Ames, are you ready to move that. To the spreadsheet?
I move the LFO primary budget recommendation.
Well, Ms. Ames is ready to move the spreadsheet.
I'll mention a couple of things on the spreadsheet. Line four, there are some savings related to the reduction in Junction City. I just wanted to note that because we didn't open all the wards, there's also some overhead-type costs, shared services-type costs that were savings, and we've incorporated them here. And then on line 10, where we've been seeing only the AG costs, here we see actually some state assessment costs. So we're in the governor's budget, $800,000 was added into this budget to cover some additional state assessments, state government service charges. Again, we're taking them back out at this point, but in the end of session bill, we're going to likely see that come back in to some extent. Okay.
Question. When you talked about the state assessment, and I know, and not in this committee, but another committee of talking about truing up the governor's staff, do you know whether that's taken to, because that's an implication for all the agencies?
If I may, Madam Chair.
That's fine.
Thank you. We just actually dealt with this in the General Government Subcommittee yesterday, Senator. The governor's staff issue, we had asked previous Governor Kitz Hobart to deal with this in preparation for the new budget, and that had not happened. And with the transition in the governor's office, the General Government Subcommittee elected to give the new governor a chance to sort out what she wants her staffing to look like and to come back in 16, and we expect to true that all up in the 2016 session. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Because it's very important that we get, you know, the accuracy.
I completely agree, and as does the General Government Subcommittee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, and yes. The Congression at LFO, I'd like to move the LFO primary budget recommendation for central shared and statewide assessment and enterprise-wide costs.
Thank you. Is there a discussion on this budget? Objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, then the final piece of this is I think, I call it on here, final work session materials. I'll pull all these pieces we've sort of pre-approved together, and then we'll go through the KPMs and the budget notes. The spreadsheet that you'll see on that shows you what we've approved for each of the pieces as we've gone through. So these numbers all match the recommendations that you saw along the way. So
we're ready for a recommendation. And we're going to do key performance measures afterwards.
After this one, okay. After that first one.
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5526.
Discussion? Objections? Motion passes.
Okay, and then if you go on in the packet, you see a five-page key performance list. And remember, the agency came back and really spent the whole day going through this in some detail. I will note that it does include new targets for 2016 and 17, and I did want to note that the newest health transformation report will be coming out on June 24th, that for many of these measures, not all, but many, that will have the 2014 data for the first time. So often what you're seeing in this most current results column is the 2013 data. So I mean, everyone's all kind of excited to see what all the new measures will look like, because as we move through the process of actually bringing on all these new people onto the health plan, how our results are going to look. The LFO recommendation is at the bottom of page 4, just to approve the KPMs as proposed and approve the targets for 16 and 17.
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures to Senate Bill 5526.
Discussion? You know, everything looked like it was moving the right direction, and as you said, we're pretty eager to see that trend continues. We certainly hope so and have confidence that it should.
Yeah. And there's key performance measures here, Madam Chair, and then some that we also see for the health plan that are also very interesting. You know, I'll just highlight one that we just got back for the first time. That was key performance measures for the hospital systems. One of those key performance measures asked the question, what percentage of people after being discharged from a hospital setting are then seen by a mental health at the community level? The goal was that 60% be seen within a week. That goal was not reached for the most part, or barely reached, and the goal was that be seen within a week. They should have been seen immediately.
Right.
And that should be 100%. And the fact that we have a key performance measure for hospitals under the CCOs that is that week is amazing. I would expect if you put in there that they had to be seen within 24 hours of discharge from a mental health institution at the community health level, we'd be at about zero. Those people go out in the street with a small prescription, end up back in the emergency room, out in the street, and lost to follow-up care. So this is just a highlight of where key performance measures need to change and where we need to change the system. Thank you.
Discussions of mobile crisis services, for example.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
We've got a long way to go.
Yeah. Further discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just have to chime in and agree with Senator Bates because, you know, when we did the reforms, I'm hoping, and I think others are, that these KPMs and others will parallel with, you know, our outcome that we're expecting through the CCOs and others, and it would be a work well accomplished if we can get those parallels and make a lot easier for us when we begin to make budgetary decisions.
Senator.
Thank you. Do we have a sense, does anybody have a sense of how much of the challenge relates to workforce with qualified mental health professionals and how much of it relates to challenges in coordinating care? And if we have adequate workforce, in theory, is it because not enough of our patients or our mental health professionals are taking OHP patients? Do we have any sense of that? I know we have a crisis in primary care, but what about mental health?
Senator Bates.
Let me partially answer that. It's all the above. One of the big impediments of people getting taken care of is the incredible amount of paperwork required to open and close claims of mentally ill people.
Yeah.
People with alcohol and drug problems. Up to 60% of a worker's time can be spent just doing that. Most of those requirements are from the state, not from the federal government. We've been working on that for 4 years and not gotten very far. Number two, we do have some shortages of workers.
I'd like to stop right there. I hope there were at least two or three people in the audience listening to that last comment.
Thank you. We do have some shortages of workers in different parts of the state, some more than others. Again, the map is helping us with that, getting a sense of what's going on. And then the last point you made was very appropriate also. There's a lack of coordination. People want to coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
Police want to coordinate. The judges want to coordinate. Hospital systems do. Marion County has actually shown us a potential way of doing it. And I think that's something that will be mimicked in many other places. Douglas County is getting ready to do it, probably going to start the first of the year. Tri-County area, as you know,
mm-hmm.
in your area,
mm-hmm.
is stepping up also. Bend is also there, and believe it or not, Medford and Jackson County are finally saying we've got to change things too. So we're seeing a grassroots change here,
mm-hmm.
and the state's sort of stumbling along to catch up and to support those programs. And I got to give hats off to Marion County. They've really stepped up the way we all should do.
Mr. Chair, I just have to weigh in and say that that's thanks to the leadership in Marion County, not only on this issue, but working together on other issues to make sure that we've got the wraparound services and things that we need. And I thank you to the county commissioners and to our sheriff and DA. The public health system here, I need to just say thank you to them because they've stepped up when there's a problem that's identified and willing to roll up their sleeves to try to come up with a solution.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Got it.
Further discussion on this motion? Objections? Motion passes.
The last piece before we actually adopt the amendment is the proposed budget notes, which is in your packet. So there's six of them. I'm going to describe them briefly, but will not bore you with reading them out loud. Budget note one for medical assistance programs puts together a work group to examine some of the issues with MMIS as it relates to other systems and interfaces. Number two, medical assistance programs. This is a budget note to assure all parties that the base rate for the hospital assessment will be 5.3% and that that rate will float to assure equilibrium. Budget notes three and four are the same thing. They just make it clear that the cap on the growth rate in those programs is not intended to shift costs to PEB and OEB members. Budget note five, addictions and mental health, is requiring the agency to report back on the new investments, in particular, including details of specific program investments, how the investments address gaps in the current system, community partnerships supporting these investments, progress, and outcomes or expected outcomes. And finally, budget note six, addictions and mental health, addresses the issue of boarding of patients with mental illness in hospital emergency rooms and requires the agency to come back with a report really laying out what the issues are, the magnitude of issues, as well as some analysis on potential solutions.
Discussion. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the budget notes as listed by LFO into Senate Bill 5526.
Discussion? Objections? Motion passes.
And then the last piece, the amendment, is at the back of your packet that lays out the final budget numbers. In your memo is a summary of all of that, which is just simply laying out the numbers that you saw on the spreadsheet, but into their specific legal appropriations.
Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 55.
Well, oops. The amendment.
I move the Ash 1 amendment to 5526.
Great. Discussion on the amendment. Objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 5526 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion. Ms. Ames, I want to thank you as we're wrapping up this bill for the tremendous effort you have made to pull this all together today and for the last 5 or 6 months, indeed for several years. Your knowledge and experience and humor really allowed you to do very fine work and helped us through a lot of tedious and critically important material. So thank you very much for your work.
And I want to ditto that, too. Yeah, she took the words out of my mouth. You've been a great help in getting us through this. This is a monumental budget. It's almost now $20 billion with federal fund matches involved in it. Probably one in four Oregonians is now insured through this program. It means 95% of Oregonians have insurance. There's a lot of controversy about this on the federal level, but at the state of Oregon, we've done the right thing and got our people insured. And inside this budget, there are many moving parts that we have to watch carefully between now and what I call the march to 2019, 2020, when we take on that 10%. We look like this budget puts us in a position that we can meet that without a great deal of angst for other budgets in the state. We're very close to being able to reach that if we maintain this funding level of general funds and other funds come in as we hope they will. But it's a good budget. I appreciate your hard work. It's not a perfect budget. These things never are. They're too big. There's people who would be disappointed in this budget. Others will be happy. I want everyone to know that this is the final budget we're passing out as far as OHA is concerned, other than a little rounding up at the end. There's a sign in my door that says there's no more money. don't ask. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Richards.
I too want to, you know, thank Ms. Ames, but I also think we need to thank the new director who came in and in a very short period of time, you know, worked with LFO and those of us on this panel. It's not an easy task to come in to get your arms and everything wrapped around a budget of this magnitude, and I think then the capable leadership of Lynn, she and staff have done a very good job, and I think we were all sitting when knowing that the transition was going to be made, and we're going, you know, she's got a big task ahead of us, and she's met the task, so I think we need to say a thank you to her as well.
Thank you. Further discussion? Objections? Motion passes.
We'll need carriers. Okay, I'll take it to the Senate floor.
Okay.
You want to take it in?
Take it on
you want to take it? Who wants? You want? You want
whatever,
to take it?
Whatever you prefer, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to do it if you'd like me to.
I'll read it in full. Is that okay?
Fine.
Whatever you want to do.
Yep. Whatever you want.
Senator Wickers has seniority. Would you like?
I can carry it up. It's fine.
Okay.
And I promise right. You can be twin jackets.
All right.
On the Senate floor, do you want to go
through? We'll do four. Okay, done.
No.
I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 5526.
We're going to have to rearrange the order here.
Mr. Which one do you want to do next?
I guess we'll just follow. Well, actually, we'll do.
Linda,
okay, so
first,
yeah. I'll do this one first. 2936?
Yes. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2936 relating to substance abuse treatment. Ms. Toe.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2936 requires the Oregon Health Authority to maintain a registry of sobering facilities and requires these facilities to adopt policies in consultation with addiction treatment programs or providers. The bill also extends civil and criminal immunity to new sobering facilities for action taken in good faith on probable cause and without gross negligence. In addition, the bill allows law enforcement to take intoxicated persons to sobering facilities and protects from disclosure without consent records of admission to the sobering facility. It comes to you from the House Committee on Judiciary and the House Committee on Rules. There is a dash B20 amendment along with your original staff measure summary and fiscal impact statements in your OLIS package. Passage of this bill is anticipated to have minimal impact, and the dash 20 includes the Department of State Police and the definition of police officer along with county and city police officer, and it specifies that a police officer includes a member of law enforcement who's employed part-time and full-time. And with the inclusion of the dash 20, the fiscal impact is still minimal to indeterminate, and that is it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move the dash B20 amendment to House Bill 2936.
Representative Stark, what do you think? Is that a good idea?
I think it's a great idea. Would you like more information from me on this bill?
1 minute.
Okay. So we've heard in this committee what a great job some of the sober facilities in Oregon have done. And ironically, they don't actually exist in state law. And so this bill basically spells it out and also spells out the intake process for law enforcement, and it correlates the amount of legal protection to the level of affiliation with treatment facilities and oversight and so forth. We worked with a number of groups. The trial lawyers were quite concerned that we tiptoe into this new arena. And so there's a slightly different level of immunity for existing centers that will get registered, and then new centers that will open up will have a slightly lesser immunity as we check out this. And so the tiptoeing is that we will allow three or so to register in the upcoming days. And then the fiscal, the reason it came here is AMH will actually be doing a report back on these centers and so forth. So we can kind of take a look at that down the road and say, yeah, it's working out great, or maybe it's not working out, but we expect it will continue working great as it has been We want to give some of these rural counties especially an option other than jail and the ER for individuals. And so it's a great part of the mental health continuum.
Thank you. Senator.
Thank you so much. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Stark for bringing this to our attention. I've had some opportunity to have some really great discussions with him about this. But the other question I have, Ms. Toe, Oregon has a pretty robust system with our police departments and sheriffs of reserve officers who are unpaid but trained members. And do we know if they're covered under this new statute as well?
Yes.
Because I would hope that they would be, especially in some of our more rural counties.
Yes. So, Madam Chair, the education for me of every pebble in a pond has a great ripple effect has come to light in this bill. So, in fact, that is the reason for the Dash 20 amendments, or attempting to resolve that was the Dash 20. So we heard from those out of Multnomah County that there are deputized individuals that go out and can sometimes pick up. And we modified the definition of police officer to make sure that they were all included.
Okay.
Unfortunately, when we did that, we unintentionally had the words full-time, employed full-time, and then we also, by the city or county, and we had left out state. So we included state and included part-time. So it should be all of those. One other comment on the Oregon State Police concern on the fiscal. This is in no way intended to change their current practice as far as transporting the individuals. If they need to use an ambulance or secure transport, that's current law in several different locations. So we're not attempting to address anything with their current practices there. So it should have no fiscal impact on them regarding that.
If, quick follow-up, if I may. But, Representative, I appreciate the change to part time, but the term employed is what worries me, because at least my understanding is that employment implies remuneration, and reserve officers aren't remunerated for their service, generally speaking. They're volunteers. And I'm just concerned about their liability in this context as well.
Correct. Again, good concern, and Madam Chair, on page 2, line 11, it also makes reference to those who are deputized, intended to go beyond just the financial employed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one question. Why is it a B-20 instead of an A-20? What's a B?
I think it went through rules and had an amendment there,
so it was A and gross.
So that's why they call it a B.
Yes.
I've never seen a B-20 before.
And it was B and gross.
Then the next one will be C.
Yeah, I guess so. Hopefully there is. Oh, it will be a C.
Is there any other discussion on the motion regarding the amendment? Objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2936 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Discussion? Objections. Motion passes.
Representative Stark has kindly offered me the opportunity to take this in the Senate, so I'd be honored if I could take it in full, Madam Chair, unless somebody else wants to. Unless you'd like to. It's up to you.
You can do it.
Feel free. I don't care.
Senator Steiner.
No, it's fine, Madam Chair. I don't care.
And in the House, Representative Stark.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2936. We're moving now to a work session on House Bill 3391.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This measure comes to you from the House Committee on Human Services and Housing, and it authorizes the Attorney General to bring action in a circuit court for a citation or a stalking protective order on behalf of employees of the Department of Human Services. It also establishes an 8-member task force on safety for child welfare employees. And you should have a Dash 3 amendment along with the staff measure summary and fiscal impact statements in your OLIS package. The Dash 3 amendment actually removes the language establishing the task force on safety for child welfare and employees, and that Dash 3 amendment doesn't change the minimal fiscal impact of the bill.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3391.
Discussion.
My only comment is I'm sorry we live in a society at a time when this is necessary.
Yep.
Objections. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3391 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Discussion. Objections. Motion passes. Carriers.
I believe Bill
Evans. He's the chief.
Involved in the Senate. Right.
No, I don't know if he signed on in the Senate.
Anybody know?
In the Senate?
I don't know if we had any senators on it.
I'll go ahead and take it. Nobody's.
Okay, and Senator Steiner Hayward, you'll take it in full.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm opening a work session on House. Close the work session on 3391. Opening the work session on House Bill 3243.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. House Bill 3243 relates to deceased persons. The bill transfers the Indigent Disposition Fund program from the Oregon Health Authority to the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. This program is funded by a portion of the death record filing fee paid by funeral service practitioners. It's a $20 fee. $6 of that fee goes to the Indigent Disposition Fund to reimburse funeral practitioners for the disposition of indigent remains. The Mortuary Board and OHA had previously entered into an agreement to have the Mortuary Board administer the program, which is included in the budget bill for Mortuary Board, a slight FTE increase to administer this. House Bill 3243 would actually transfer the program, which requires the -B6 amendment. So there will be a limitation increase for the Mortuary and Cemetery Board of $378,000 other funds. That's the $6 that is anticipated to get transferred in and then out of that fund. And there's a corresponding reduction to the Oregon Health Authority other funds limitation of $378,000.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the B6 amendment to House Bill 3243.
Discussion. Objections. Yeah. Oh, discussion.
I particularly like the relating clause of this coming at the end of session. It just seems appropriate relating to deceased persons. I'm kind of like I'm in that category almost now, okay?
Objections? Not to the comment, but to the motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill.
Motion passes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did that one
now, again? Another motion.
Like a zombie here. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3243 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion. Objections. Motion passes. Carriers.
Just the full for the Senate. We've already passed through the House.
Or full?
Let's see. Senator Winters? Full on Friday. We need a carry on the Senate floor. I'd like to have Senator Courtney carry it to the floor. I'll ask him if I can get him to do it. Relating to deceased persons.
It is time for us to adjourn.
I doubt he'll take it, so I'll take it if he won't.
Let's see.
Is that Widener?
Is it Widener?
We can talk him into it.
Depends on how he's feeling the day.
No. The bill, the printed bill.
Right now, it's not the time to ask.
Senator Winters, will you take this in full?
Will it be in full on Friday?
That's the plan. Yes.
Is that the plan? Neither one, because I won't be here.
That would be me then.
Okay. Well, I'll take it to the floor if Courtney won't.
That's all on this one. I'm closing that work session on House Bill 3243. There is no other business before us today. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Meeting adjourned.
We're going to do. What are we doing VHS next week?
No, we should be.
What are we doing VHS next week?
No.